Hello, everyone. Welcome to the program Beyond Winning, where we discuss the many aspects of high school basketball from the perspectives of coaches and individuals that have dedicated most of their lives to the game. Here, we want to provide insight to the strategies, intent, and the impact of coaches as it relates to the development of young men and women who pursue the game. We will discuss the history and highlights, the successes and instances where success escaped them. We want to get at the soul of coaching. We want to get beyond the X's, beyond the O's, and beyond winning. Returning to the program today is Coach Kerry Sargent. this coach has experienced the game at the highest levels and is unique in the fact that they've achieved this working with both talented young men and young women. He currently coaches at Mallard Creek and is currently in the midst of coaching his AAU program, the Charlotte Nets. And he was granted recognition by his peers within the last couple years as being a North Carolina Hall of Fame AAU coach. So welcome to the program, Kerry Sargent. Good afternoon, Kerry. How you doing?
Thanks a lot, Richard. I'm surprised you had me back, but I appreciate it.
No, we got you back, and we definitely want to keep your perspective on the scene. Last time we got together, we mentioned one of the areas that you mentioned was your alumni program, and the fact that you've got a lot of players that are involved in various pursuits. Is that program kind of a formal program, informal program?
Well, it's really more of an informal program. Thanks to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the social media outlets, we've been able to stay connected to a lot of our players after they leave us, go on to college, go on to the professional ranks, or whatever they, end up doing. We've been fortunate to keep up with a lot of them.
I got you. How do they relate to, some of your current players, the ones that are coming through the high school level or your AAU program now?
Same thing. Social media is an angel and it's a devil. Mm-hmm. You can get caught up in crazy things dealing with social media, but it also allows you to keep up with kids and also helps you to market kids. Mm-hmm. That seems to be one of the bigger things right now. People visiting kids, Twitter. I just had. We talked about it before, us playing in the live period, and some of my kids had college coaches that started to follow them. So based on the social media outlets, that's basically how we've been able to keep up with them.
Now, in terms of some of your former players, can you give us an idea of, where they are now? I mean, players you had, 10, 15 years ago, you kind of alluded to it the last time. One of them is working with the justice system. I'm sure some got different positions around.
Well, we've had kids to go through the program that have done well, done great things from an athletic standpoint, also from a just a professional standpoint. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned to you, one of my favorite players is the judge, and have to be one of your frat brothers. I'm not going to mention his name. But also, we have several ministers, surprisingly, after playing for me, think they would be a little bit discouraged from going into ministry. But several ministers all over the country. But we've had some to experience a lot of success. Some have not fared well. Some of them ended up in the criminal justice system. Mm. But that's a part of life. That's a part of what happens to kids and folks in general. So, but the majority of them have done well.
Yeah, over a long period of time, with that number of players, I mean, you're going to have a wide range.
At one time we tried to create an alumni list of the kids that I've coached, and also the ones that CJ coached. CJ hasn't coached as long as I have in terms of AAU, but we took that list and tried to create an alumni list that was pretty extensive, including all the places that they've gone to school, what have they done once they completed college. And it was a pretty long list. And somehow it got misplaced about 5 years ago, and it was too long for us to try to do it again. but, you know, we have several guys that have gone through the program. And I sort of look at it this way. If they make it to me, I've been coaching 17 and under almost all the 27 years I've been head coach. And the kids come through the program, if they make it to me, that's sort of the rite of passage to be really considered an alumni.
Yeah.
Some, there are other kids that have gone through the program, didn't make it to me. We count them as being part of the program, but, you know, they're not full-blooded unless they come through me.
They're not fully accredited.
Right.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of your players have coached in your program.
Yeah. Well, currently, Coach Maceo Bowman coaches the 16-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
He was on the second team that I coached. He's a Charlotte Sonic. He wants me to say that as opposed to Charlotte Nets.
Okay.
And just so people know, we were originally the Charlotte Sonics. We evolved to the Nets for a number of reasons. I won't go into those right now, but the program as it started was the Charlotte Sonics, and that's the foundation of what we try to do.
Mm-hmm.
But Coach Bowman is coached a lot of the same kids that I've been able to coach. He was a star quarterback at North Carolina A&T, played football, and he's now is a North Carolina A&T Hall of Famer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's been a number of kids come and go through the program. Scott Lilly, who played at Virginia Commonwealth, he was a coach at one time. So there's been several.
And Maceo, I think, is in pharmaceutical industry.
Making a lot of money, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. And the current high school 4A coach, high school championship 4A coach, is one of your players, I believe.
He's a former player, and he's a frat brother also. I always have to mention that because it's important. But yeah, he's the 4A champion, Preston Davis, who came a long way in terms of getting his program the way he wants it to be, and I think he's going to stay there for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Let's shift gears for a minute. Let's talk about it's the NC2A certified period, otherwise known as the open period in recruiting. You just been through that in April. Typically, it starts after the championship. I think that Wednesday, and then it kind of runs on a schedule through April. They stop, and then it picks up again in July, sometime in July.
Actually, what it is the last two weekends in April is the NCAA live period. We play the last two weekends in front of college coaches. Keep in mind, JUCO coaches, Division II coaches, Division III coaches can come out, you know, watch anytime, but Division I coaches can only come out those last two weekends in April.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, every kid wants to play Division I,
right,
with NAIA skills. But we played in Spartanburg, very nice tournament put on by Phenom. We also played in Sewanee, which is just outside of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in front of several coaches. And so what usually happens is the coaches go back, take names, you know, evaluate, and decide who they are interested in pursuing.
Mm-hmm.
And normally what they do is if there's a kid on my squad that they're interested in, they'll give me a call, want to know details about him, his academic situation, his family situation, what kind of kid is he, coachable. And, you know, we take it from there. And then sometimes, if I have a kid that I feel like is being overlooked, or usually just a good kid, I'll make a call with, you know, to talk to some coaches I may know, and see what happens.
What? Tell me, what is it that a player and a parent expect versus what a coach is looking for, you know, to play in college? I mean, most of these kids think you got to have your ball in your hand and you got to score 30 every game. And I think that might be a disconnect there.
That's absolutely a disconnect there. Parents only, primarily, I'm not going to say all parents. Most parents only understand scoring. Mm-hmm. They judge their kid on, you know, how many points they score. But college coaches look for more than that. They look for the position that you play. What do you do at that position? If you're a power forward, are you rebounding, boxing out? Are you defending the post? Can you run the floor? Can you catch? You know, what kind of motor do you have? Point guards, the way when I came along, there was really no such thing as a point guard. There was a guard. You had to handle, you had to drive, you had to distribute, you had to defend, you had to do all of that. So either guard could do that. But everything is centered around scoring now. You have point guards that are supposed to be the lead guard and run the offense, but they are called combo guards now because they want to score and do the other things that that a guard is supposed to do. So parents look at it like, how come these folks not recruit my son? They're not looking at if a school has 14, 15 scholarships and they already have 11 kids on scholarship and they only have 4 scholarships to give. And they have 2 poor guards already that are freshmen and sophomores. They often wonder why they're not recruiting my son as a point guard. Well, they don't have a spot for your son. Mm-hmm. It's not personal. You know, my son just as good as him. I hear that a lot. My son, he can do what he can do. And I'm like, that's not the way it works. You got to look at your son's individual skills and his love of the game to determine what happens to him as a basketball player.
Well, and I think the other thing that comes into play, you know, if a player has good enough skills to be recognized by a college coach, you know, some programs are not fit for everybody. I mean, you know, one guy's game may be, you know, I mean, you kind of get to the Steph Curry thing. Would he have been Steph Curry going to an ACC school versus going to a school like Davidson that was in, you know, different kind of league, different kind of category?
You know, a lot of this is being in the right place at the right time. When I talk to my kids about being recruited, I tell them, well, the ones that are at a level that they have choices about where they go to school. And I always tell them, you got to love the school first because coaches might not be there. And I also tell them that if a coach is recruiting you, he loves you now. Mm. But when he gets you on campus, he don't love you no more. And I just put it to them that way. And a lot of them are shocked when I tell them that. And my preparation for the kids that play for me is I give them a taste of what they're going to get at the college level because, you know, I know how it is. And some of them appreciate it and some of them don't. But your point is well taken. You know, every kid can't go to where they want to go to school because they don't have the skills or their skills don't fit what they're doing at that particular team.
Now, there's also, you know, some thought process just about recruiting. It can get kind of shady. It can get a little you know, as some of my friends say, greasy.
Well, I haven't had anybody that good to get that way. I mean, I never been offered I never been offered any money or any inducements to send a kid to a program personally. But it goes on, and I hear about it.
Mm-hmm.
And mainly I hear about it from other college coaches. They tell you, well, this place is doing this and they're doing that. But, you know, I mean, there's so much money involved in recruitment. There's so much money involved in college basketball that it's very difficult for the money not to touch some of these folks.
So how do you talk to players, parents, in terms of what should you be doing? How should you be preparing yourself? And ultimately, you're going to school to get educated.
Well, that's what I talked to them about. I talked to them about a free education, and also talked to them about, you know, you can get an education from a lot of places. You know, it doesn't have to be an ACC school or SEC school all the time. But you also have to do a self-analysis of your son. What is he capable of doing on a basketball level, and what is he capable of doing on an academic level? But I really talked to them about doing the research about the institution that they want their kid to go to, and also study the coach and their style and what their program has accomplished, and how many kids have had success once they have gone from that program. I think that's important. And I talked to them the same way about coming to play for me. I say, listen, talk to people in the community. Talk to my former parents to see what kind of track record we have for our kids and what they've been able to do. And then you make a decision about whether or not, you know, our program is a good program for your kid to come to. So I give them the same kind of information as in relation to picking a school.
So really, when you look at it, it's almost a form of analysis that you really, you know, the thing is just not like, hey, I see the team on TV, you know, we read about them in the Sports Illustrated. You're talking about digging, doing some research, and putting together an analysis that, you know, you examine the school as much as they examine in them.
Absolutely, and I encourage that. That doesn't happen a lot, but I encourage people to do that because, you know, we live in the ESPN era where people see stuff on TV and they want their kid to be on TV doing what they see on TV. And every mama thinks that their kid is capable of doing it. And if you tell them that they're not capable of doing it, they look at you like you're crazy.
Yeah.
Like you hate.
Yeah.
I mean, you try to be honest about it and, you know, I've gotten into trouble with folks about, you know, trying to be honest. And I think, you know, that's always been my focus is to try to be honest with folks.
Sometimes, straight no chase.
Well, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's misconstrued as hating. But, you know, another thing, I do have a personal agenda when it comes to that. I don't want our program represented by college coaches saying that we're not teaching them anything. You know, I want our kids to be prepared to play at the next level. You know, and a lot of times when you try to do that, people don't see it the way you see it. So it is an analysis that parents need to make, but they listen to the love that they get from college coaches most times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what they want to hear. Everybody wants to be loved, and it works.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. We're going to take a break right now. This is Beyond Winning. I'm Richard Lancaster. I'm here with Coach Kerry Sargent, and we'll get right back with you in a second. Beyond Winning. beyond winning. Hello, everyone. We're back with Beyond Winning. I'm here with Kerry Sargent. And in the last segment, we were talking about the recruiting process, and we were just kind of winding it up and talking about the process that you take your players through and really looking at this thing beyond, hey, if I score a lot of points, I'm going to get noticed, that you really have to work on your game. You have to bring more to the game than just the scoring aspects of it. And then you really have to look at the schools. Is anything more you want to comment on with that?
Well, you know, the other thing I want to talk about was the academic part of it. Mm-hmm. As a coach, as an AU coach in particular, and as a high school coach, being an assistant coach at Mallet Creek, similarities are close. Working with girls and boys, some of the things that I do with our boys in terms of looking at the academic side and making sure they're qualified to play at the next level, because we have a lot of highly recruited young ladies at Mallet Creek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A lot of coaches come to our gym in the fall for workouts, and so, you know, we're always involved in recruiting. But I always talk to our kids about, you know, being prepared and, you know, sending information to Clearinghouse to make sure that, you know, you take the SAT, and so that when a college coach calls me, I'm able to tell them, you know, this kid is already qualified, or he needs to do a little bit more to get qualified for your program. So that's a big part of it, too. But the other thing I want to talk about as it relates to recruiting and with me being in it for such a long time and to be able to make connections with a lot of college coaches, a lot of coaches that were recruiters back when I started are head coaches now.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, it gives me an opportunity to touch them based on our relationship from way back when they were beating the bushes and needed somebody to talk to. And so those relations have been good. I was able to, you know, I don't want to embarrass anybody, but I was able to make a call from one of my players a couple years ago that I'm really most proud about. And DeMontez Stitt, who some of our coaches say was my favorite player. I'm not saying he's my favorite player, but he was close to it. Because he did everything I asked him to do. He was a great leader. He was able to play at the next level. He went to Clemson. He was a star at Clemson. Clemson hadn't been to the NCAAs for a very long time until he got there. And while he was there, they went 4 years in a row. But his brother, Omega, played for me 2 years ago. Omega was a late bloomer. He didn't get a lot of recruitment opportunities, and I was able to call the school and told the coach that I needed to find somewhere for him to play. And the coach said, Kerry, if you like him, we'll take him.
Mm.
That was pretty much how it went. And Omega followed through. At the same time, Omega had his academics in order that he was able to go. I didn't have to question whether or not he had done what he needed to do.
Yeah.
And he followed up on it, and he was able to go there last year. And as a matter of fact, I texted him yesterday to see what was going on with him, and he's getting prepared to play, you know, the upcoming season. So that meant a lot to me because I was real close to the family. You know, Grandma was one of my favorite people. And so it made me feel good to be able to help him, you know, end up playing college ball like his brother did.
And that's the benefit of you've been in it a long time. I know probably in the last 2 or 3 years, you always kind of look back, reevaluate, and think, is this going to be, you know, the last time around? But, you know, you built up a lot of credibility, these relationships. You know, these coaches know you, and they know the kind of program that you've had that takes it beyond, you know, just getting a good basketball player, you know, from that standpoint.
Well, as I mentioned last week, last time we were together, it's going to be difficult for me to get out of it because of the relationships with the young people and just for the love of basketball. But it's more difficult for a man like me to stay in it based on the way the high-level players are set up now. These shoe deals or these shoe companies are looking for younger guys that do it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't fit that.
Well, let's talk about it. Do it a different way. Now, we're seeing a lot of heat and light behind some of these, you know, programs. You have, you know, you got some teams that have budgets and they can play all over the country. Talk to us about that.
Well, from what I could see, like I said, it's a young man's game. A lot of these young folks that are doing it now, they have a different agenda in terms of expanding their careers through, you know, coaching these kind of teams.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a real job for the time that I coached. So I couldn't spend all my time training kids or, you know, traveling here, traveling there. So it's just, I'm not being critical. It's just that it's different. And my lifestyle can't accommodate what they're doing now. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you know, I'm an older guy. I can't do what I used to do.
Mm-hmm.
On the basketball court. The mind is still there, but, you know, it's just a little bit different.
I hear you.
And I'm not willing to chase kids all around the place to get them to come play either. So.
Well, and I think that's the thing. I mean, I think, you know, a kid has to decide, is, you know, the reputation of the Charlotte program, a kid has to decide, is they playing with a Carey Sargent, is that, you know, is that what they want to do, given the myriad of options? And so some time ago we had a conversation, and or there was a conversation that was going around on social media about the relevancy of high school basketball, and was that, you know, does a kid, you know, male or female, you know, can they not play at the high school level but still move on to the next level and get to the college game?
Are you asking me if I think that makes sense, or what do you suggest?
I'm just throwing it out there. I figured, you know, you might.
Well, I think this. I think that it's ridiculous for a kid to try to eliminate playing high school basketball. I think high school basketball is a necessity for kids to develop, not only from a basketball standpoint, but from an academic and social standpoint. You don't get that. I mean, we do things with kids academically and socially, but it's nothing compared to what happens at the high school level.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different relationship. High school coaches with a kid, you know, 9 months out of the year.
Yep.
And he sees them in all different aspects of life. As a student, I don't see kids. I deal with kids one-on-one when they come to practice or when we travel. So it's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the folks that are suggesting that are the folks that think they can benefit from that.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to control what happens to a kid. Basketball-wise, so they can benefit from their kid. especially if he's a high level player. You know, a lot of folks, in my opinion, are looking at how can I up my level, depending on this kid. And I'm not saying that's the case for all people, all coaches, all people around those kids, but it's true for a lot of them. They see the benefits, they see the money around what happens to a kid when he goes to the next level. And everybody want to be a piece, want a piece of it. You know, people always ask me about, you know, our program and, you know, Kerry, you got this kid playing this place, this kid playing that place. Does he help you, you know, financially with the program? And I say to them, some do, some don't. But it's not because I ask them to do it. If they volunteer to do it, I accept it. But I don't want a kid that I coach to avoid me when he sees me because he thinks I'm going to ask him for money. I don't want that. I think a kid should look at how he benefited from the program, and if they feel like they benefited from it and they want to help other kids, then I think it's up to them to make that decision. And I had several kids that do it. You know, Anthony Morrow supported us fully for the last 3 years. You know, and he, you know, and people say, well, he could do this and he can do it. I'm like, no. I appreciate what he's done.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to ask him to do more or challenge him to do more. No, I appreciate it. I've had other kids. Larry Blair contributed to me. Joby Thomas, who's one of my all-time favorites that I have to mention, who's a minister right now. I just might throw that out there. Supported me for years while he's playing overseas. So it's been a number of guys that have felt the need to come back and give. And a lot of them want to give more. And I have to mention, one of my coaches, Coach Chuck Richards, both his sons played for our program, and both of those guys support the program. So, you know, you can't expect people to do what they're supposed to do unless they want to do it.
Right. But you make a good point on a couple levels. One, this last point that you're making is really about community and wanting to make things better.
Yeah.
You know, giving young people an outlet. The other point, the relevancy of high school basketball, again, it's about more than the game. And it's about this interaction that a coach has over a long period of time. And the coach, and I think we might have talked about that, where the coach's place in a young person's life. You know, parents, it might be a teacher, it might be a minister, the coach. But at certain points in time, that coach could be two, if not one, from that standpoint.
Yeah, I got off a little bit on a tangent. I'm prone to do that. My girl said I do it all the time. but yeah, I think the high school coach plays a critical role in the lives of these young people. AAU coaches, summer coaches have interjected themselves into that process. And most time it's good. But I don't think you can surpass the relationship that a high school coach has with a kid because of time. They're with them. They see them on a different level. And to want to try to eliminate them as being a piece of the puzzle, I think is just something that somebody is trying to do to start controversy.
It's almost like it's a differentiating factor. A coach is, you know, the coach, the game is the start of the relationship with the young person. And, you know, a coach kind of, that's their basis, but the coaches that really are about moving the kids beyond are really looking at, hey, what's going on with this young person?
Well, you know, I think part of the summer process is a little bit different. It evolves to something over time, but you know, a high school coach is an educator and a teacher.
Yes.
And that's where they come from. You know, that's where it starts from. And so it's a little bit different. Summer ball coaches, and I'm one of them, is more promotion and presenting the finished product to in my case, the collegiate coaches. But developing that kid and building that kid, you know, dealing with character and integrity and all that stuff, you try to enhance that in the summer. At least I did. But the high school coach is fundamentally the one that get a chance to do that a lot better than most summer coaches get a chance to do it.
So there's really a role there. It's just like there's the coach should enhance what the parents are doing at home. The high school coach has one role, and the summer league coach, summer program coach, has another role, and it's really, you really have kind of a dynamic there that, if done right, really provides an opportunity for a young person.
And that's true, but I will say that over the years, there's always been a little bit of conflict between who's in control. Summer coach and the high school coach.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, my perspective has always been, I'm not trying to get in the way of the high school coach because, you know, kids, I mean, that's the foundation.
Yeah.
And a lot of high school coaches feel a little bit, they feel some kind of way about it when they feel like the kids have a better relationship with the summer coaches. Mm-hmm. On a summer team than the high school team. But I think fundamentally the high school is where all of it needs to start and finish.
Well, Coach, I'm going to lead you into this and let you think about this going into the break, okay? But Studio B, we were sitting around and he opened this door. And so I want to get your perspective on it. And I'm not going to put you all the way on the spot, but I just, you know, want to address this. So which is it? Is it the shooter in the three-point era, the modern-day shooter, or is it in the shooter? Is it the shooter that's in the 60s, 70s, pre-three-point era? We're going to go in the break, and then I'm going to let you address that when we come back for break. This is Beyond Winning with Richard Lancaster and Coach Carey. Sorry. Beyond Winning. Beyond Winning. Beyond Winning. This is Beyond Winning with Richard Lancaster. I'm here with Coach Carey Sargent. And Carey, right at the last break, we put the off-the-wall question out there about the different eras in shooting. So I'm going to turn it over to you. You've had an opportunity to consider that. So
As I mentioned earlier, I think my background as a shooter gives me a lot of credibility as it relates to talking about this particular subject.
We got to get to YouTube on that now.
I know you have some questions about it, but trust and believe.
Okay, yeah. Trust in your stuff.
That's right. As a matter of fact, I always tell my kids the reason people consider me a defensive coach is because, you know, I always looked at defenses to try to stop me from shooting the basketball. But that's not what you want to know about.
I hear you.
In terms of shooters, I think that over my 27 years or my 30 years as a coach in this area, I've seen some of the best shooters come through. I mentioned Larry Blair, who's a scorer more than a shooter, but he could shoot the three ball, and he had a tremendous jump shot. I never saw him get a shot blocked at 5'11 or whatever he was. I never saw him get a shot blocked. He had range. Anthony Morrow, who I coached for a short time, spent, you know, his time at Georgia Tech as a three-point shooter and 10 years in the league as a three-point shooter, one of the best to ever come through. Mm-hmm. Joby Thomas, who I mentioned, was a Conference USA leading scorer, leading three-point shooter for years. I don't know if that's been broken, his record's been broken, but he was a top three-point shooter. And also Matthew Fisher Davis, who's just finished his career at Vanderbilt, who I consider probably the best shooter that I've seen up close.
He led the SEC, right?
Led the SEC as a freshman in three-point shooting percentage. And I think he's in the top three this year, top five. And he's had a lot of injuries. I would say in terms of just shooting the basketball, he's probably the best that I've seen up close.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of eras, they didn't have a three-point line until I was out of college. Matter of fact, they didn't have a three-point line when I played in military. we were taught pull-up jump shots. Mid-range was a shot.
Mm-hmm.
But they also had guys that could stretch the floor and shoot, deep. So it's a little bit different now.
Well, and I think, like we were talking earlier, it's very easy to say the guys that are playing today are the greatest when you don't have that perspective of, watching the game from late 60s, 70s, and, you can introduce some people that had, just as much accuracy, maybe not the range, because you didn't, it was just a different kind of game.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I have this discussion with people all the time. I always joke about playing professional basketball players in particular, playing in my era. You had a lot of good shooters, but shooting, in my opinion, was not completely developed during that time.
Mm-hmm.
You had a lot of one-hand push shots. You had guys that dribble with one hand.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If you dribble one hand right now, you couldn't play high school ball.
Right.
So there was limits in what you could do. So in terms of eras, they had some guys back in the day that could shoot the basketball. And I don't want to go way back to Havlicek and all them guys that you wanted to talk about.
Butter Bean,
yeah,
Dollar Bill Bradley,
Bill Bradley shot like a shot one hand shot. But I was about to shoot. It went in.
Uh-huh.
Dade Buescher could shoot. Bob Lanier, big guys could shoot back then.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To be honest about it, I look at the Ray Allen original era is starting to look at the best shooters. And Reggie's shot was broke. If you really want to look at his form and his style,
mm-hmm.
but it went in. Ray Allen had one of the best looking shots I've seen.
Right, right.
Eras are different.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what started all this was the famous local kid that really captured the imagination of the league right now. He steps across half court. And if he lets it fly, five times out of ten, it's going to go in. You know, you saw him coming along.
I saw him as a young player. You know, he was frail, and kids would, as soon as he hit the floor, they were pressing him.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that I remember about Steph, just aside from the shooting, as a player, you know, they would pressure him. And, you know, if they took him out of the game, he would just go and sit down and cheer his team on.
Mm-hmm.
I always liked that about him.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
His demeanor was, he never got flustered that I could see.
Yeah.
And I really respect his parents for the way they raised him. Mm-hmm. And he does that now.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't get too excited. Now he's more of an entertainer.
Yeah, yeah.
He gets the fans hyped now. To me, it's a little bit out of his character, but it is his character. But in terms of Steph, if you look at his form on his shot, it's not a prototypical jump shooter shot.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the results of what he gets, it's unbelievable. His range is ridiculous. And I'd have to say, when it's all said and done, he might be at the top of the list when it comes to best shooters in the history of the league.
I'll say this about Steph. You got to admire his work ethic. You know, he put the work in. He developed his game. And I think he got his strength in the areas that he needed to have strength in to enhance his game. I mean, he needed, you know, that ball handling, that ability to get to the stick. And then, you know, clearly, I mean, he's putting up the kind of shots that gives him the confidence to shoot from anywhere on the floor. Coach, is there anything that you want to say, that you idea you want to get across that we might not have covered in the early sessions? I mean, there'll be other sessions, but I know that mind is always working. There's always got something that, you know, might be at the top of mind there.
Well, I can't think of anything as I sit here, you know, other than I'm enjoying the opportunity to just talk about basketball. You know, CJ's not here, but the stuff that we're talking about now, we spend hours talking about the history of the game and the players that have been able to play in Charlotte in particular. We haven't touched, and like he said in the last podcast, that I can only speak to players that I've been associated with. There are a lot of other players in Charlotte that have done well. I didn't get a chance to coach Steph. My son was a player, not an outstanding player, during Steph's time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got a chance to see him up close. My son did too. And it wasn't pretty, but you know, I want to give credit to other folks that have played in other programs. I just don't know them as well.
Yeah,
and I think they deserve equal amounts of recognition and too. It's just not our players that other good players.
Well, you make a good point. I mean, Charlotte has a rich history of basketball. There's a lot of good coaches that are out there. And what we hope to do is bring them on, along with yourself and CJ. And really, we like to get their thought process out there. We like to give them a forum because, you know, as this program, you know, it tries to get to, you know, what are the coaches trying to convey? What are they trying to accomplish? And most of these coaches that you're talking about and that I've met, They want to make an impact on young people's lives so that we have a better community. Coach, again, I thank you for coming on. Thank you for taking the time. Thank you for being here. And everybody, once again, this is Beyond Winning with Coach Kerry Sargent. I'm Richard Lancaster, and I hope you get a chance to hear us. Give us a little feedback on what you've heard. Tell us where we are hitting on some areas that you want to talk about, and tell us where we might need to improve. But either way it goes, please tell us. So in the meantime, I would encourage you to stay aware, and I'd also say stay on it and stay with it. This is Beyond Winning with Richard Lancaster. Take care. Beyond Winning. Beyond Winning. Beyond winning.